Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
It's the New Books and Literature Podcast. I'm your host, Phil Budivine, and my guest today is Ryan Ridge. Ryan is the author of the poetry collection Ox and the story collection Hunters and Gamblers. He has also created two chapbooks, Hey, It's America and 22nd Century Man. Mr. Ridge has most recently published his novella-length work. I'm not sure if I should call it a novella. It's the New Books and Literature Podcast. I'm your host, Phil Budivine, and my guest today is Ryan Ridge. Ryan is the author of the poetry collection Ox and the story collection Hunters and Gamblers. He has also created two chapbooks, Hey, It's America and 22nd Century Man. Mr. Ridge has most recently published his novella-length work. I'm not sure if I should call it a novella or a novella-length work. American Homes, which is what we're going to focus on today. And Professor Ridge teaches creative writing at the University of Louisville. Ryan Ridge, thanks for being on.
Hey, Phil, thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing I think that we should say about American Homes is that its structure isn't really narrative per se. It's a series of topical entries on basements and doors and attics and all the pieces that make up a house. And as a whole, the entries kind of flesh out the concept of a home, not so much like the narrative of a space or anything like that. So for me, it kind of reads like a Lonely Planet travel guide or encyclopedia or something like that, more like a nonfiction. So the question that emerges from that for me is, how do you think about the structure of the book, or if you like, and if you had to, how would you categorize it structurally as prose that's not a story or a piece of fiction like that?
Oh, well, that's a great question, Phil. I like that Lonely Travel Planet guide. That's a nice description of it. Well, you know, it was one of those things that I guess you could read it as a collection of essays. You could read it as I don't know. I would say it's at the time. Let me talk about maybe influences, and that might be the back way of getting around to maybe what it is. But around the time I was writing, I was looking at a lot of William Eggleston photographs. You familiar with Eggleston at all?
I haven't heard of him. I'll look him up.
Yeah, he's a Southern photographer. They call him the godfather of color photography. And he's got once you've seen some of his photographs, you'd recognize a lot of album covers. But he'd shoot things like a ceiling, and it would make it say, hey, what the hell is that, you know? He's kind of a master of defamiliarization, you know. He just shoot these really banal things. I mean, his tagline was, I'm at war with the obvious. And and I think by that he meant, hey, I'm just going to present or represent the obvious in a kind of a different way. So with the structure of Homes, you know, it started off as just a fake kind of a guidebook. I'd been reading, I'd been looking at those, Eggleston photographs. I'd had Ben Marcus close by with the Age of Wire and String, but I didn't want to do like a new mythologies or anything like that. I was just thinking, I might do look at these objects and see what happens with it. And it's in three parts. The first part's kind of the fake guidebook, and I did that as long as I could before that ran out of steam.
I noticed that it started at part three, and then it went to the rest of the three. Sections kind of follow from the third part, so it seemed I wasn't sure how that was arranged, if that was an intentional.
Yeah, I wanted to be kind of like you dropped in already in progress. you know, because you said it's kind of encyclopedic. Yeah, just like the implied edge, so to speak. I didn't want to start with one, obviously. So we were going to, I don't know, start two? No, I start three, maybe. And it's in three parts. Maybe it's counting down. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's parts one and two are off scene.
Okay. Yeah, I did get that feel of something that was off scene. I've noticed several parts that, like, for example, you referenced the New Statistical Association of Analysis or something, and then I looked that up. That's a fictional thing. So you're referencing an authority that's not actually real, and then there's parts of the first section that reference other parts of the section that don't actually exist. As far as I can tell, there's like one that's like see the section on domestic relations or something like that, which isn't actually there. So it seems kind of like the fragmentary evidence of a real, of something that's real, but we don't get the full picture of it. It's just sort of implied, and I like that aspect of it. But
to get it all in, I think it would be kind of insane. I wanted to, get the obsessiveness of the narrator across. Eventually, the narrator just became me, Ryan Ridge,
right.
A fictional version of me. What it is, the first chapter I wrote, if you call it a chapter, was the doors section. And I had Jim Morrison was the narrator, and I thought that was a little too heavy-handed and obvious. So I eventually made it me, but it's not really me. This character is a little wild, a little obsessive, you know, in terms of cataloging this stuff.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned cataloging. There's a line in the porch entries where there's a writer called Rich, quote unquote Rich, and he's sitting on a porch and he's trying to think of a name for the porch section. And we learn the porch doesn't actually belong to him. It belongs to somebody named Clarence. And Clarence, one of the few characters in the actual work is this Clarence. And Clarence asks, so you're a writer there, Ridge? And this is the question I wasn't going to ask you, because me interviewing you about the book that you wrote seems sort of premised on the answer being yes. Obviously, you did write it. But when Clarence asks Ridge if he's a writer there, Ridge says more like a cataloger, I guess. So the question that for that is why more like a cataloger than a writer?
Well, I think in terms of this project, it seems to be more, schematic and less narrative and more, I would say, rather than building, it's kind of taking it apart, kind of deconstructing. So the catalog seemed to be an interesting way of describing what the project is at hand here, because it's the first thing I've done. It's not really narrative in really any sense. There are some characters in it. There are some narrative elements, but in the sense, it's not here's the story. We're going from point A to point B. It's kind of a more circular in its structure. It's kind of a
right. And I keep like struggling to refer to it, you know, like it's part of the 21st Century Prose series at the University of Michigan Press, and it is certainly prose, but I, you know, it's, you can't call it a story. Most prose, what we read, is like prose fiction, so that's the first question that comes up. But I do like this idea of a conceptualist idiom, and actually Evan Lavender Smith, I'm not sure if you know him personally, but he does give a blurb at the very beginning of the book, and it says, Ryan Ridge inflects his anatomy of suburban interiors with a madcap panoptic conceptualist idiom, and his readers will be left feeling like they never gave nearly enough thought to the stuff of real lived life, the stuff that real lived life comprises: walls, floors, doors, windows, garages, sheds, attics, and basements. You're talking about like a schematic and an anatomy. But I guess, I mean, for me, I wonder if the structure that does emerge in this story, if it is a story, the structure that does emerge in the prose, does that reflect in any way, does the fragmentary nature of the prose work reflect the way that it was written?
Oh, it certainly does. The third part, which is the first part, that came first, actually. You know, I was trying to do the mock instruction manual guidebook, and it was written as a series of prose entries, and I got about 50-60 pages in, and I just felt that that was kind of, it had reached its threshold in terms of its saturation point. I thought that, well, I've done this as far as I can do this, And you mentioned Evan's blurb, and, you know, he's kind of a hero of mine. I love his From Old Notebooks, which is, you know, fragmentary novel, very much in the vein of it's his own thing, essentially. You know, I've not read too many books like Evan's novel there. Maybe Markson, but Evan's kind of doing his own thing with it. And the middle section, I would say, was definitely influenced by those two writers, David Markson and, you know, Evan Lavender Smith. And by the third section, which is just ideas, the book kind of just falls apart into one-liners and jokes and gags.
Yeah. I mean, there's some great sections in those more fragmentary parts. Story, but there's lines like "so much ends continuously," like in the wild bedrooms of the sea. So there's a certain amount of freedom that lack of form allows you to experiment with. Do you think of yourself as like an experimental writer? Are you trying to do something new here, or is this just sort of the way that reflects your own creativity or your own creative process?
Ooh, well, yeah, I guess I am kind of an experimental writer. I always want to do something different. I did a collection of stories, and after I did that, I thought, well, you know, I've kind of done a collection of stories. I want to do something different. This is my second real book. I'd say this is a sophomore effort here, and full-length collection. Although you asked if it was a novel or a novella early on. It's novella length, right? About 115 pages, although it's got a lot of white space in it. But, you know, and just thinking about the way that it came together, I guess it was an experiment in the way it was put together. So I guess this is an experimental book.
Okay. I did look back on some of your past work in preparing for this interview, and I looked at Hates America, which is kind of presented to us as a series of cards. When I looked at your poetry collection, Ox, it seems, I mean, you know, I just graduated with a degree in English, and so we've been taught to read poetry, like, in terms of tone and lyricism and meter and all that formalism. And your poetry is almost more about the typography. So it seems like, I mean, it does seem like that experimental aspect of the work seems to, I mean, I'm not sure it would be fair to say it appeals to you, but it seems to be evident in what you've done so far. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, Bill. I get some of that concrete poetry. I'd almost say that was influential, and some of the language poets as well. But, the typography is definitely going to be key, and collaboration as well, which is another aspect of some of those works. With Hey, It's America, that was, kind of presented as a book in a box written in, I think it's 37 sections, so it's on 37 cards. And then that was collaborative with an artist. And, you know, I've collaborated with artists on a couple of these books.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So to get back to some of critical reception of your book, I guess, Amina Kane is also among your blurbs, and she writes, "An insane and brilliant book that travels the American home while moving ever further into the mind." And I thought the second part of that sentence was kind of interesting. You detail the American home and what happens in the American home, but Amina Kane is curious about how you're getting further into the mind. And there's a section on the front porch where you write, "The front porch is one of the great nostalgias of our time. Which time? This time, which means no time to look back. Even less time to crawl inside of our minds. Here we are." So do you think of American homes as something that you wrote as kind of more than just the home? Is there a whole that's greater than the sum of its parts here? Is there a mental, an inner life kind of being described here? Or what do you think that American homes is ultimately getting at, if there is a thing that it is?
Yeah, I'd say it's a book of deep interiority. It does, like Amina says, travel further and further into this particular narrator's, neurosis, whatever you want to call that, obsessiveness in cataloging and trying to categorize the parts of the places that surround us. You know, at the time I was living in Southern California, living in a little apartment, and just thinking about the idea of homes and houses and our apartments, houses, are they homes? You know, the difference in houses and homes, and just where we're at in terms of those domestic spaces.
And do you feel like that's an interesting point they bring up? So do you feel like you're getting after this greater idea of domesticity, like a feeling of needing to find home? Is there something more conceptual out there? Because I'm trying to find a way to think about like what the American home is if it's not just an American home. Because in the very beginning, you have like 23 sentences of American homes is, American homes mm-hmm. is various things. American homes is the soundtrack to our American lives. American homes is the foundation of all union. So it just seems like there's something more to it. There's this greater thing, a greater theme that's being explored. I'm not sure how you think about that.
Well, I think it's an exploration, thinking about trying to come to terms with this character, trying to come to terms with his place in the greater scheme of capitalism in the 21st century. You know, there's definitely nostalgia for the idea. I wouldn't even say the reality, but the idea of the American dream. And just kind of exploring that myth a little bit, because I mean that is it, right? The house and the fence and the yard and that deal, which we seem to be very far away from that.
Yeah, I guess another question for me would be: we talked a little bit about the narrator, and you say the narrator kind of started off as like a Jim Morrison persona, and then it eventually just became a version of yourself. You maybe shed some light on how you approach the narrative as the narrator, or what you kind of what kind of sensibility you took towards the story as a narrator, where it begins to depart from just Ryan Rich and becomes Rich the writer on Clarence Borch.
Sure, yeah, I think that it's kind of a keyed up version of myself, the way it just deviating from the Jim Morrison thing was it just seemed kind of obvious, heavy handed. But I thought it'd be a book about doors, maybe a chat book about doors. But then it got some more steam, and I realized, hey, it needs to be narrated by somebody else. And so I said, hey, well, why lie? I'll just do it. I'll be the narrator. I'll step up and do this one. But
okay,
yeah.
Well, did you feel like it gained something from being more close to your own experience or your own self?
Well, I wanted to...
Started to become a bigger project and
yeah.
Then you stepped in?
Yeah, and I wanted to play with form and genre, you know. Maybe it's nonfiction, maybe it's fiction, maybe it's poetry, I don't know. I kind of like the nebulous factor there, that it's kind of hard to pin down, and that's slippery in that sense.
Yeah. I liked one of the things that got my attention about it when I first read it was that it didn't fit into any of my expectations of prose. I was sitting down, I was reading it, and I thought, this seems like I'm reading a bad book, but it's so not non-fictional. It's so imaginative. It's so much more interested in like the unreal, almost, it seems like. I guess another question is, you talked about Jim Morrison. You talk about wanting to break from tradition, but what, if any, and you talk about William Eggleston as well. Maybe not just in this project, but in what you're trying to create and what you're trying to write, who are your models and who do you kind of look to as people who've made things that you think of as good, artistically speaking?
No, sure. Yeah. I'd go back to Gertrude Stein's Tender Buttons was maybe big on this one, even though it doesn't read like that necessarily, but the way that she put that collection together. And, those are almost, it's almost a catalog as well, if you think about the way that one's put together and her languagey, the fact that it's so languagey and good. Other influences, I'd say, Russell Edson, you mentioned the unreal, and I like the way that Edson always would blend the real and the unreal. And he worked short too. Brodigan was big. Trout Fishing and In Watermelon Sugar, those two books were very big early on. And in terms of other big influences on this one, I'd say, David Markson, his later novels, the last four novels that he wrote.
Wittgenstein's Mistress, read about that?
Mm-hmm, sure.
David Foster Wallace has this great essay on Fiction Finds Mistress, and he talks about how it's the job of fiction to animate ideas. He says, make the head throb heart like. So he wants to take like something that's intellectual or abstract, and he wants to make it kind of alive. So what Markson does, or my impression of, I haven't read the book, but I've read about it. Like Wittgenstein's Logico-Philosophical Tractatus or something.
Mm-hmm.
The question that comes out of that is, are there any theoretical or philosophical ideas that underpin this? You reference Ronald Reagan, you reference Eugene Debs. So as somebody who's writing about American homes, you seem to have a grasp of American history. Do you have a grasp or a feel for like an intellectual history as well, or?
Well, the short answer is no, but there definitely is a long glance back in terms of the look at the historical. But it's not too long because we're only dealing with in terms of America, you know, 250 years or so. So that's kind of a nice chunk of history to work with.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, we got a lot of I think it goes back to there's some consideration of Jefferson's bedroom.
Right.
Jefferson's house, what he was up to early on.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I guess, you're from Louisville too, right? You're not just from Louisville. You're originally from Louisville. Is that right?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I'm from here and I'm back on kind of a temporary basis. I'm a visiting professor at the University of Louisville. And so it's interesting to be home, but not really be home.
Right.
Yeah.
Has your own sense of home influenced, or did that in any way influence your writing of American Homes? Was your sense of home in Louisville in any way part of what ended up being American Homes in any way?
It could be, yeah. I'd say probably, not consciously, but probably definitely, that's probably there, you know. Louisville's changed a lot in the almost decade I was gone. It's become a cool town. I probably need to leave again, and it's going to keep getting cooler. But, yeah.
All right. So you talk about your past influences. I guess, is there anything that you're reading now that you're finding very interesting, or anything that you're working on now and reading now? So I guess it's a question of like where's your head at, you know, like is there anything you're reading or writing that you're excited about?
Yeah, reading, you know, a book I've been reading and rereading is Antwerp by Roberto Bolaño. That's a little, I guess it's a novella length book. New Directions put it out. I kind of like everything they put out. And it's a psychedelic freak out is what one critic called it. And I've gone back to that again and again just to try to see what he's doing with it. I don't quite wrap my mind around it, but I think I'm starting to see what's happening here. And that's kind of influencing the project I'm working on now.
Which is a great transition to the next question. What are you working on now? What are your future plans?
Oh, well, working on a couple of things. You know, I had the summer off, which is amazing. And I started off working on a novel called Coach. And what this thing is it, it's about a disgraced NFL football coach turned fisherman, turned philanthropist, turned new age guru. It kind of tracks the last few years of this guy's life before he disappears into the Himalayas. But I got about 12,000 words into that and realized, hey, you know, this POV is off. So I started a different thing, more influenced by the Bologna that I was talking about. It's called Echo Park, and it's just about adjunct and itinerant lifestyles in Southern California.
Thank you for being on. Thank you for learning more about American Homes.
Good, Phil. Well, thanks for having me.